They found the princess missing from her room. I wondered if we were dealing with a traitor, Raz said. And when we followed that reeking perfume of hers to these tunnels, well, I knew it had to be an inside job.
He reached behind his back and jerked his weapons out of their scabbards, a pair of curved daggers, razor sharp on one end, jagged and serrated on the other. They didn't just look designed to kill. They look designed to hurt.
But to think, it was you, my pathetic snow cub brother. Is this seriously where you found your balls? This is how you finally get your revenge.
Even with his accent, the tone sounded familiar. He reminded me of Val, a butcher's son who'd laughed as he made me watch him drown a piglet. It wasn't just the emptiness in his eyes or the cruel curl of his mouth. It was the tension oozing off him, the nervousness, the way his hatred and aggression seemed forced, like he had to constantly hurt others just to keep his own thoughts at bay. Zatochi or Westerner, all bullies were the same.
"This isn't about us, Raz," Zell said. "This is bigger, more important. This is about our people, our future. Our father has sold us out, all of us. He's conspiring with the lord of this house to bring a war to our lands."
The other warriors looked toward Raz, who just shook his head.
"Did you hear that, men?" he shouted. "Because I know what I heard. Wah, 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 my feelings got hurt. Wah, 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 my daddy is so mean."
He laughed, and his men laughed with him. A few tightened their grips on their weapons. Zell stepped back, sucking in his breath. He must have finally realized just how screwed we were.
"Kill them all," Raz said. "Leave the snow cub for me."
The warriors advanced. Zell whipped his sword out of its sheath, its thin, delicately curved blade sparkling dangerously. Miles let out a pitiful wail, and Jax stepped up to Zell's side. My hands clenched into fists. I didn't know what was going to happen or what I could do, but I knew I would go down fighting. A hand pressed against my back. Liriana stepped forward, pushing past me and Zell and Jax to stand in the front. I was going to pull her back, but there was something different about her. Her cheeks were still slick with tears, but her eyes didn't look hopeless anymore. They looked hard, focused, furious. The air around her crackled as she walked. The taste of snow and frost filled my mouth. A cold wind swirled around her.
"You were going to kill me," she said,
and her voice was impossibly deep and unearthly, the rumblings of mountains grinding together.
"I came here as a guest, and you were going to kill me."
She reached out her hand, extending her long, elegant fingers. She'd finally taken off her gloves. And for the first time, I saw her rings. A concussive blast of force burst out of her hand, hitting the Zatochi warriors like a focused hurricane. They flew off their feet, slamming into the walls of the cavern, their weapons shattering, their torches flying away. Deep rifts spider-webbed out in the walls behind them, like cracks in a pane of glass. The ground shook beneath our feet. Dust rained down from the ceiling.
"You killed my uncle!"
Liriana screamed, and the air sucked in around her hand, gathering for another blast. Raz, lying in a heap on the ground, was the first to respond.
"She's a goddamned witch!"
he screamed, and hurled one of his daggers. It grazed Liriana's shoulder, barely cutting her, but it was still enough to throw her off balance. She jerked to the side, and the blast ripped out of her hand straight into the side of the chamber, blasting a hole through the wall with an explosive spray of dirt and stone. The tunnels trembled. Chunks rained down from the ceiling. Not just dust, but whole, fist-sized slabs of stone. One of the Zatochi screamed in pain. Jax tumbled over into the dirt. The ground lurched hard beneath me, like a horse bolting. I fell onto one knee and found myself staring into the hole Liriana had blown through the wall. Cold, stale air gusted through the darkness, and I could hear the sound of rushing water. The underground river, the one we'd heard earlier. It was nearby, much closer than I thought.
"Kill them!"
Raz yelled, and a few of his men staggered up to their feet. The walls of the chamber buckled and groaned. Even as my heart thundered in my chest, even with dirt blinding my eyes, I realized one thing with absolute clarity. If we stayed here, we'd die. I grabbed Lyriana and lunged forward through the hole in the wall into the darkness. I'd expected solid ground, but instead, my feet hit a steep, crumbling slope. I managed to get out the very beginning of a scream before plunging down in a fumbling, painful roll. I immediately lost my grip on Lyriana. My sunstone jostled around wildly, illuminating the barest glimpses of where I was. A weathered stone ceiling, jutting stalagmites, scattered piles of stone. The tunnels must have been built into a natural cave system, and I was hurtling through it head over heels, falling down this hill to who knows where. I could hear Lyriana screaming and other voices following after. Maybe Miles and Jax, maybe Raz and his men. The slope ended and I fell off it. For a horrible 5 seconds, I was in free fall, flailing through the air, waiting for impact. Then I hit water, stunningly cold, like being shoved into a bucket of ice. A bucket of ice with a raging current. I was underwater, choking, wrenched along by a force far too strong to swim against. The roar of the river drowned out the world. I went under, then out, then under, then out. When Jax and I were kids, we played a game when we went swimming, where we'd try to dunk each other below the water. This was like that, except horrible and terrifying. I gasped and gagged, flailing as the river's current hurled me downstream. I pushed above the surface just in time to see the ceiling of the cave vanish, replaced by the twinkling stars of the night sky, zooming by as if they were all falling. I could even make out the green glow of the coastal lights. The river must have exited the cave, which was good, except that meant it was carrying us out to sea. I twisted around and could just barely make out a sandy shore, but I was being pulled away from it far too quickly. A chunk of debris slammed hard into my back. Pain flared through my side so severe I felt it tingling through my fingers. I whipped around the debris and went back under, but now I didn't have the strength to fight. The current dragged me down. I gasped and water flooded my lungs, dank and foul. My eyes burned, my side ached. I felt the water plunge me down into the depths. I was scared, so scared I'd crossed into a strange, shocked calm. I was going to die here. I was going to drown in the current and be carried out to sea, my bones forgotten like so many others. I was going to die a 16-year-old virgin without a last name who never got to become a lady or travel to Lightspire or even fall in love. I was going to die. Then something grabbed me. It wasn't a hand, not quite. It felt like I was suddenly wrapped up in something warm and glowing and safe. It was like being draped in a snug blanket after coming in from the rain, like being hugged by your father after you'd just been crying. It wasn't just physically warm. It was comforting, loving, reassuring. This warm something, whatever it was, grabbed me as I sank and lifted me up, gently, tenderly out of the depths. I gasped after breaching the surface and spat out murky black water. The force that held me lifted me up into the air, so I was floating a good foot above the ocean. A yellow light enveloped me in its soft glow, and I knew that was what was holding me up, where that feeling of safety and warmth was coming from. Droplets of water floated off my skin and hovered impossibly in front of me, like snowflakes dancing at winter's first fall. I heard a gasp, so I craned my head as much as I could. There were more yellow lights behind me, and in them, more people. Miles, Zell, and Jax, all hanging above the water in glowing bubbles, all looking as stunned as I was. I tried to shout out to them, but my lungs still hurt too much, so I just made a soft grunt, one that sounded happier than it should have. I couldn't help myself. I was just so, so safe. I felt a jerking motion, and realized we weren't just hovering anymore, but moving. That same force that was holding the bubbles pulled us through the darkness, away from the ocean crashing behind us. Now that I wasn't sinking, I could see the cave's exit, a gaping maw in the side of a stony cliff face, the river rushing out like a flickering tongue. But we weren't being carried back into the cave. We were pulled instead to the side, toward a long, white sand beach just by the river's edge, laid out under the cliffside. There was one more light on this beach, this one tall and thin and stationary. A figure stood at the heart of it, arms raised up, head cocked back, hands glowing bright. I couldn't tell where the light ended and where Liriana began. Her hair had streaks of gold running through it, pulsing like rivulets of molten metal. The rings on her fingers were burning so brightly I couldn't even see her hands. Her pupils and irises were completely gone. Her eyes were all yellow, twin suns bursting with light in the middle of her face. She waved her hands forward, and we all drifted toward her onto the shore. I felt my feet touch solid ground. The warm glow released me, and I tumbled down. I'd never been so happy to get a face full of sand. I spat out the last of the water with a hacking cough, even as I heard the impacts of the three guys hitting the ground around me. Zell landed in a neat crouch, bracing himself with one hand. Miles fell straight into the sand. Jax collapsed into a heap, panting and gasping. Liriana? I looked up at her, shielding my eyes with one hand, squinting through her unearthly glow. Talandra, she said, and her voice still had that rumble to it, like it was coming from the heart of a thunderstorm. You're safe. The light around her snuffed out like a candle. Her rings flickered and went dark. She blinked, and her eyes had pupils again. I did it, she said, her voice her own, as bubbly as it had been when she'd first come tumbling into the tunnels. I really did it! Then she keeled over face first into the sand and lay still. Chapter 7. Liriana! I screamed. I tried to get up and run to her, but my legs betrayed me. They were no longer magical, floaty, feel-good legs, but real legs. Legs that had just slid down a jagged hill and been immersed in freezing water. Legs that exploded with pain and sent me collapsing into the sand. Jax, snapping out of his daze and scrambling over, was the first to her side. He turned her over onto her back. A minute ago, Liriana had looked like the titans on the murals in the castle's shrine, a glowing being of light and power. Now she looked terrifyingly small and broken. Her beautiful dress was torn in dozens of places. Her bare feet were bloody and swollen. Jax pushed aside the wet hair clinging to her face and pressed his ear to her lips. "She's breathing!" he shouted, and my stomach unclenched with a surge of relief. "She's breathing! I think she just... she just magicked herself out." I didn't know you could magic yourself out, but I suppose I also hadn't known Liriana was a mage in the first place. I didn't think anyone had known that, not even my father. The royal family must have wanted it kept a secret.
"She saved our lives,"
Zell said softly. Through the dim light, I could only see his silhouette on the shore's edge, facing the dark ocean beyond.
"She saved all of us."
"Well, pardon me if I'm not ready to play the trumpets and break out the cake,"
Miles replied, his voice hoarse and scratchy. He squatted on all fours in the sand, head bowed low, his wet curls wrapped like tendrils around his ears.
"We might be safe from the ocean, but what do we do when those Zatochi lunatics come tearing out after us?"
"They won't,"
Jax grunted.
"The cave collapsed after we went through. And even if they followed, they'd be swept out to sea. We never would have made it out without the princess. She saved us from Zell's psycho crew."
Earlier tonight, an eternity ago, I might have scolded Jax for being offensive. But now I was just too exhausted, too sore, too broken. I just wanted to collapse into the sand and pass out. I just wanted it all to go away. Zell turned to Jax. Just the barest hint of anger dancing in his eyes.
That wasn't my crew,
he said.
And even if it was, they're not the ones to worry about. It's your people we should be scared of.
My people?
Jax lurched to his feet, and not very gracefully.
My people are passed out drunk in the stables right now. That wasn't my father going berserk up there with an axe, or my mother blowing up the Archmagus with some crazy-ass magic bomb. My mother was obviously coerced,
Miles stammered.
She just built the weapon, and it was the other's scheme.
My father is a warrior, not a schemer,
Zell said.
If anything, your mother was the one who seduced him into it.
My mother would never...
It was my father, I said. And the night went silent. He's the one behind this all. He's the traitor. Zell, Miles, and Jax turned to stare at me.
Tilla,
Jax said.
You don't know. I mean...
No, Jax. I do know. We all know it. This was all his plan. I think I said it just to shut them up, but now that the words were out, they had the unmistakable weight of truth. My father is a traitor. My father is a killer. And now my father probably wants me dead. The words felt like a knife scraping me hollow. I wished Lyriana had just let the current take me away. There was nothing else to say after that. Zell turned back to the ocean, and Miles slumped into the sand. Jax ran his hands through his messy, wet hair, craning his face up to the sky. I closed my eyes and drowned out the voices in my head. I focused on the wet sand in my hands, the breeze on my skin. I felt the weight of my soaking clothes for the first time, felt their chill against me.
It just doesn't make sense,
Miles muttered, still trying to somehow think his way out of this.
None of it. Even if our parents are secretly Western radicals, what in the frozen hell are they trying to accomplish? What does killing the Archmagus and blaming the Zatochi gain them?
I hadn't even stopped to think about this yet. It lures more mages into the West, I speculated. Sets them up for an ambush.
Right, but with what? That mage killer bomb my mother had was powerful, but how many more could they have? Your average mage has what? 3-4 rings? Multiply that by 6 missing mages, and that's 25 bombs tops. Nowhere near enough to hold back even a single company of mages.
Miles shook his head.
There must be something we're not understanding here. There has to be a reasonable explanation. We just need to talk to them and find out what's going on. Are you kidding me?
Jax demanded.
My mother is very reasonable,
Miles pressed.
If I could just talk to her, I could find out what really happened and make sure she understood we didn't mean any harm. I'm sure I could persuade her to give us a second chance.
For you and me, maybe, I said, unable to keep my mouth shut any further. But what about Jax? What about the princess? There's no way our parents would let them live, not with everything they know. I didn't mention Zell, but I didn't have to. I think all of us got the picture about what his family would do to him if he went back. Miles cradled his head in his hands, his voice trembling. I could tell he was crying.
But what... What's the alternative, Tilla? Running away? Turning our backs on our homes? On our lives? On our parents?
I didn't even know how to answer that. Could I really do it? Just run away and never set foot in Castle Waverly again? Never lie down on White Sand Beach? Never see my father again? I thought of his face down at the beach, that wild, gleeful bloodlust that had made me want to scream. Could I go back to him, even if I wanted to? Would I ever look at him the same way? Even if he forgave me, could I ever forgive him? Of course, a little voice inside me whispered. He's your father, and you love him.
Look,
Jax said, mercifully pulling me out of my thoughts.
We don't need to answer the big questions right now. What we need is food and shelter and some clothes that aren't ripped to shreds. And how do you propose we get those?
Zell asked. Jax craned his head down the beach.
I don't know how far that river took us, but we're still obviously on the western shore. I've got friends up and down this coast. I say we sit tight till morning, and then when the sun's out, I'll get us somewhere safe. Somewhere we'll be taken care of. We can figure it out from there.
Won't our parents look for us? Miles asked.
Tonight, I mean.
Zell shook his head.
Right now, anyone after us is trapped in the tunnels. It'll take them hours to get out, and even longer to get together a half-decent tracking party. Besides, they have no idea where we went.
He jerked his head toward a pile of driftwood lying under an outcropping at the base of the cliff near the cave's entrance.
We can make camp there, get a small fire going, stay warm.
He turned to gaze back out at the ocean.
I'll take first watch.
A part of me wondered why we needed a first watch, if we'd be safe until sunrise. But I didn't question it. It wasn't just that Zell was the only one among us who had even half a clue how to get by in a situation like this. It was his manner. Cool, confident, collected. Like this was just the same old shit he always had to deal with. Like this was nowhere near the worst day of his life. His own father and brother had straight up tried to kill him, but he still didn't let any emotion break through. No fear or sadness or anything. I couldn't tell if his stoic facade was just that or if he really was that jaded. Some distant part of me knew that probably wasn't healthy, but right then I didn't care. In that moment on that beach, Zell's calm was pretty much the only thing that made me feel safe. He had lost that pretty sword of his in the cave, so he pulled the sheath off his back and tossed it into the sand, followed by his soaked leather and furs. Miles paced back toward the outcropping, gathering hunks of wood, and Jax knelt down by Lyriana, lifting her up in his broad arms, and then we all walked toward the cliff face. She looked so small and fragile now. "You think she's okay?" I asked. Jax sighed.
"I hope so. I hope we're all okay."
My heart sank. I felt guilty, as if this were all my fault. In a way, it was. If it hadn't been for me, Jax would still be happily drinking with his buddies in the stables. If it hadn't been for me, he'd still have a nice, safe life ahead of him. "Jax," I said softly. "I'm so sorry." He glanced at me. One eyebrow cocked, the same sweet, goofy brother I'd loved my whole life.
"Shut your face, sis,"
he said, and walked off toward the outcropping. I smiled despite myself and walked after him. Chapter 8. An hour later, I was lying on my back in the sand, eyes shut, trying to fall asleep. 10 minutes after that, I was sitting up, wide awake, and knew there was no way in hell it was happening. I stood up on the beach, my back aching, my legs still sore. I was near a surprisingly well-made fire, gently flickering in a pit that Jax and Miles had dug. Miles lay on his side nearby, deeply asleep, twitching and whimpering. It was, just maybe, the saddest thing I'd ever seen. Jax was a few feet away, asleep half upright against the cliff wall, with Lyriana lying beside him. The two of them looked almost peaceful, if you ignored the rips in their clothes and the bruises blossoming on their skin. I couldn't believe they were able to sleep. My mind was still racing, a million thoughts colliding. I had to take a walk. Or a run. Or maybe just wade into the ocean and scream into the night sky. But I had to do something. I walked out from under the outcropping toward the dark, lapping waves. The coastal lights hung in the sky above, soft and faded now, flickering away into nothingness. I made it maybe 2 steps before I heard Zell's voice.
"Still awake?"
he asked from behind me. I spun around. Zell was sitting on a driftwood log just past the outcropping's entrance, facing out at the ocean. He was almost totally hidden in shadow. If he hadn't spoken up, I wouldn't have noticed him at all. "I was just going to go for a walk. I need to clear my thoughts." He shrugged.
"I doubt a walk will help with that. It's never helped me."
An awkward silence lingered in the night air between us.
You can join me, if you'd like.
Why the hell not, right? Not like my night could get any worse. Zell slid over, and I sat down on the log next to him. He had stripped down to a thin, sleeveless undershirt that clung to him like a second skin. I tried hard not to glance at his toned, lean arms, at his broad, bare shoulders, at the firm muscle where his neck met his back, just barely visible through his flowing hair. "How's your watch going? Any sign of them?" I asked. Zell shook his head.
"None. I haven't heard anything but the crashing of the waves and the whistling of the wind."
He had this funny way of talking, like he was being poetic without even remotely realizing it. He craned his head up to the sky. I couldn't read his expression. Sad? Worried? Longing?
"Can I ask you something?"
"Sure."
"I don't understand what happened tonight,"
he said. Was that a hint of embarrassment in his voice?
"I mean, I can understand some of it. I understand why my father did what he did. His reign as chief of clans is crumbling. He has promised our people great prosperity and glory, neither of which he has delivered. If your father offered him gold and grain, perhaps even the return of some of the borderlands, I can see why he would offer his axe in return."
Zell closed his eyes, his brow furrowed.
"But it's your father I don't understand. Aren't the princess and the mage his rulers? Doesn't he bow before them?"
He finally turned to look at me, his eyes shining bright in the moonlight.
"Why did he do it? Why would he want to kill the family he swore to serve?"
It's complicated," I said. "Your father, he's the chief of clans, right? Are there other chiefs who oppose him? Who want to be the chief themselves?"
"Of course. The conclave this year was brutal."
"Conclave?" Zell arched an eyebrow, like he really expected me to know this.
"Every 3 years, all the chieftains of all the clans gather at Zell Corso for a great conclave. After 4 days of games and feasting and drinking, the chieftains who would wish to lead present their arguments in the Hall of Bones. Then all the Zindane, the clanless women, vote on who they believe will be best, and that man is the chief of clans."
"Oh," I said, even though I didn't really understand at all. "So the chief changes, then? Often?"
"Of course."
"Well, that's not how we do it," I said. "The Valeris family rules us. They have for 120 years, since the Great War. When the king, right now that's Leopold Valeris, when he dies, his oldest child, Lyriana, takes over, and then she'll be the queen until she dies."
"But that makes no sense."
Zell stared at me skeptically, like I was pulling some kind of trick on him.
"What if your king's child is a fool? What if she leads your people to ruin?"
"We don't have a choice, Zell. They have the power, the magic. All the men of the West couldn't stand against the mages."
"Magic. Like what your princess did earlier tonight, when she pulled us out of the water."
Zell was obviously still a little in awe.
"I've never seen anything like it."
"What she did was amazing," I admitted. "But it's just a fraction of what the mages can do." I hadn't paid much attention to Headmaiden Marga's history lessons, but I remembered vividly all her accounts of the battles of the Great War, all the gory details. "They can turn men inside out from a mile away. They can rain down fire and lightning from the skies. They can rip the earth out from under a battlefield and turn rocks into monsters that battle for them."
"How did they come by such power?"
"From the Titans. Well, from their rings." Zell stared at me blankly, as if I were saying total gibberish. He really didn't know any of it, did he? "Your people, the Zatochi, you don't have any stories about Titans, do you? Giant men who came from the heavens, who transformed the world with their amazing magical powers? Zell furrowed his brow.
There are ancient legends about great monsters from the south. Huge, pale men who came from the sky with hands of fire. The shamans say the first Zitochi who used to live down in the forests you call home fled these monsters into the frozen tundra, where we've lived ever since.
He stroked his chin.
Could these monsters be your titans?
I don't know, I said, more surprised that the Zitochi had apparently once lived in the West. All I really know is what Headmaiden Marga taught me.
Which is...
I sighed. Why was I, of all people, the one teaching a history class? I could barely remember half this stuff. 1,000 years ago, my ancestors were simple folks scattered in tribes across the plains of the Heartlands, wearing animal furs, living off the land, that sort of thing. Then the Titans came down from the heavens. To them, doing magic was as natural as breathing. They settled among the tribes and taught them all kinds of things, like farming and medicine and how to build castles.
Why?
The Lightspire priests say it was because they were angels, beings of pure kindness, come to better our kind and save us from ourselves. That's why they worship them. Zell's eyes flickered with curiosity.
But you don't.
No. I mean, not really. I don't know. I'd been brought up to respect the religion of Titan worship, if only because it was the religion of our king in Lightspire. But a few years ago, when I was going through my question-everything phase, I'd gone asking around and found out what they'd believed in the days of the old kings, before we'd been conquered. Some people say the Titans weren't angels, but demons. That they brutally conquered our ancestors, used them as slaves to build their cities and plow their fields, that they used magic to oppress the entire continent.
I find that easier to believe,
Zell said. Honestly, I did too. I remembered the tapestries in my father's archives, hundreds of years old, drawn by men who'd seen Titans in the flesh. They showed terrifying creatures, hulking giants that stood twice as tall as any man, their heads bald, their eyes glowing white, their beardless faces identical and beautiful and always smiling, like porcelain masks. They sure didn't look like angels.
But the Titans are gone now.
I nodded. No one knows why. Just 100 years after they came, they disappeared overnight, leaving behind only the empty cities they built. The priests say it was because they were leaving the world in our hands now, and testing us to see if we could rise to their level or whatever. I shrugged. With the Titans gone, my people, my ancestors, were free to settle this new world. All kinds of little kingdoms sprang up over the continent. There were the baronies of the Eastern Shore, the Dynasty of Hau in the Southlands, those weird little kingdoms in the swamps whose names I can never remember, and there was the Kingdom of the West.
That was here,
Zell said, understanding. Yep, I said. After the Titans vanished, a bunch of my ancestors finally braved the Frostkissed Mountains and discovered these big old forests on the other side of them. Those pilgrims settled this land, and eventually one family came to rule over all of them. My family. The old kings. The Kents.
But they didn't have magic,
Zell said. No, no one did. Not for a long time. See, most of the Titan cities collapsed when they vanished. But one of them, the biggest, Lightspire, kept standing. For a long time, it was just a powerful trade city, nothing more. But then the family that ruled it uncovered the secrets of Titan magic, hidden in some buried libraries or whatever. They learned how to use the Titans' weapons, their rings, and that was how the first mages came about. The Valeris founded the School of Mages and created an unstoppable army. One by one, they conquered all their neighbors, turning kingdoms into provinces and making their kings bow. And finally, they came for us, the Kingdom of the West. I let out a deep exhale. That was the Great War, 120 years ago. After their mages killed almost half the men of the West, my great-great-grandfather, Albion Kent, surrendered, and the Kingdom of the West became the Western Province, just another territory of the Great Kingdom of Novarus. Zell was quiet for a while, thinking.
It sounds like your people have often been slaves,
he said at last.
First to the Titans, then to this Lightspire King. Your father, then, he did what he did so your people could be free. There's honor in that.
I guess so, I said, looking up at him. In the flickering orange light of the dying fire, his face looked serene, as calm and thoughtful as the statues of the old kings. But there was something else in his eyes, something that seemed almost gentle. Was Zell trying to make me feel better? And was it actually working? Something rustled and flickered overhead. I looked up to see a dozen streaks of sparkling light cut through the night sky, zipping past us like blue and yellow shooting stars. Zell startled, but I held out a hand to calm him. They're just whispers.
Whispers.
Magical little birds. We buy them from the Artificers Guild in Lightspire, I explained. I'd spent hours as a girl gazing into the straw-lined cages in Castle Waverly's whisper roost, because how could I not? They were so damn cute. Tiny little owls no bigger than your thumb, with big, glistening eyes that looked like galaxies. A lot less cute was how they crumbled into bone and dust after they delivered too many messages, but I made sure to not be around for that part. Most of our towns have whisper roosts. You tell a message to a bird and which roost to fly to, and then it'll go there and pass your message along, speaking your words in your voice. It's how we communicate.
Those came from your father's castle,
Zell mused.
He's sending the word out.
Yeah, I said. But which word? That the Zatochi had killed the Archmagus? And what, kidnapped the princess? What was his plan now? Why had he done any of this? I thought again of the beach, of the crunch as my father drove the dagger into Roland's eye, his vicious grin. The whispers vanished, leaving us in the dark. My father was ready to kill an innocent girl in her sleep, I said. Where's the honor in that?
Honor,
Zell repeated, as if tasting the word in his mouth.
I suppose honor can mean whatever we twist it to mean.
He paused for a full minute before speaking again.
Do you know why I went with you tonight? To spy on you. To spy on your princess. I thought that if I brought my father details of your castle's weak points, or some secret about the princess, he might soften toward me.
I reeled at that. Before, Zell admitting that he just saw us as enemies to spy on would have gotten my blood boiling. But he sounded so lost it was impossible to feel anything but sympathy.
I pretended to be your friend, so I could betray you,
he said.
And I didn't do it for my people or my family's honor. I did it because I wanted my father to be proud of me again. I did it for the man who threw an axe at my skull. So what does that make me?
A bastard, I said. Same as me. Neither of us said anything after that. The waves crashed in the darkness, and a light breeze tinged with their salty spray swept over us. Zell's hair ruffled gently behind him. I shivered, but hid it well. I tried to think of something to say, but nothing came to mind. Nothing that could make sense in this impossible moment. There weren't words for what I was feeling, for the knowledge that my entire world had crumbled in the space of one night, for the understanding that nothing would ever be right again. I looked at Zell, and he looked at me. I could tell he was thinking the same thing. So we sat there together in silence on the log, listening to the waves, staring out at the night. And I felt the tiniest bit of comfort that at least I wasn't alone. Chapter 9. The next thing I knew, I was waking up and it was mid-morning. "What?" I grumbled, blinking into the light. I felt like it had just been the middle of the night minutes ago, but now the hot sun hung overhead. My throat was so dry it felt like I'd swallowed a bag of sand. I jerked up, my back incredibly unhappy that I'd been sleeping against the log for hours. "What's going on?"
"Very little,"
Zell replied. He was sitting cross-legged in the sand just a few feet away, facing the ocean. I had a feeling he'd been there for a while. Miles was standing next to him, his hair a frazzled mess, his hands in his pockets. Looking back at the camp, I could make out Liriana's silhouette by the gently smoldering fire pit, huddled in the shadow against the cliff's wall. But where was...
"Jax went off to scout the area," Miles said. "We're just sitting tight until he gets back."
"Right, that makes sense." I stood up with a stretch. Zell seemed to be in his own world, doing whatever weird things Itochi do in the morning. I felt a sudden flash of embarrassment. What had last night been about? What was that moment we'd shared? I didn't want to think about it, so I turned to Miles. "You holding up okay?"
"About as well as I can be," he replied.
"I keep racking my brain, trying to figure this all out. I'm sure if I could just sit somewhere quiet and concentrate, I could come up with something, a plan to fix everything, without anyone else getting hurt."
"How's it looking?"
"All I've got is step one,"
Miles sighed.
"Find somewhere quiet to sit and concentrate."
I looked back at the fire pit, where we'd set up camp. Liriana wasn't just sitting there. She was hunched with her face in her hands, crying, almost shaking with grief. Even from across the beach, I could make out her muffled wails, her despairing sobs.
"She's been like that all morning," Miles said. "Jax and I tried to talk to her, but it didn't help. Maybe you could try. I'm sure you'd do better than we did."
"Why? Because I'm a girl?"
I bristled a little at that. Especially since I probably had more in common with Zell than I did with a sheltered butterfly like Liriana. But then she let out another heaving, shuddering sob, and I turned to head her way. I'd be a terrible person if I didn't even try. Liriana heard me approach. She glanced up, sniffling, as I came over, and she looked even worse than I'd imagined. Her cheeks were stained with tears, and her eyes were bloodshot and weary. Her hair hung in tangled clumps around her face. A dark bruise had blossomed around her jawline, probably from the fall through the caves, and her lip was split open and bloody. She didn't look like the princess who had stunned everyone at the feast, or the mage who had saved our lives. She just looked like a girl who'd been through hell. She sobbed again, a full-body wail, like a widow at a funeral. And maybe it made me a bitch, but I couldn't help but feel kind of annoyed with her. We'd all had a bad night. We were all in huge trouble. But the rest of us were holding it together and not having full-on meltdowns. So why couldn't she?
"They killed Uncle Roland," she muttered softly. "They killed him like he was nothing."
That feeling of annoyance curdled instantly into guilt. Right. She hadn't just had a bad night. She'd watched her uncle get slaughtered before her eyes. She had every right in the world to melt down. Hell, she had every right to punch me in the face.
"I'm sorry," I said, sitting down next to her. "It was terrible." I desperately wished I could think of something better to say, something that wasn't so trite or obvious or hollow. But what could I say? I hadn't paid much attention to my etiquette lessons, but I was pretty sure there wasn't a standard expression for, "Sorry my dad killed your uncle."
"He told me it'd be dangerous. He said people would want to hurt us, but I didn't believe him. I didn't listen."
Liriana's voice quivered.
"I don't want this anymore. I don't want to experience the world. I don't want any of it. I just want to go home.
We all do, I said, and my chest ached. I felt terrible for having judged her so much the night before. Terrible for all the misfortune my family had brought down on her. I reached out to hold her, pulled my hand back when I realized I shouldn't touch the princess, and then decided that we were well past the point of respecting those sorts of boundaries. I wrapped my arm around Lyriana and pulled her close and held her against me as she cried, as her tears soaked my shirt. Her body racked against mine, heaving with her wails, but I held her firm. That seemed to help, just a little. She stopped crying and turned back to me with a sniffle, her head cocked to the side as if really looking at me for the first time.
You betrayed your own father to protect me, she said. You could have handed me over, but you didn't. You saved my life.
Yeah, well, you saved us all from drowning, I replied. So I guess we're even. And hey, you got to dip that foot in the endless ocean after all.
I dipped a lot more than a foot.
She gave just the faintest hint of a smile.
If you can get me home, I promise you'll be safe. I swear by the Titans, I'll make sure no harm comes your way.
And what about my father? Would any harm come his way? I didn't dare ask because I already knew the answer.
Hey!
Jax's voice shouted from up the beach.
I'm back!
I tried to help Lyriana up so we could see what was happening, but she didn't budge.
Please, she said. I don't want to talk to anyone else. Just leave me here for now. I'd like to grieve alone.
There wasn't much I could say to that. I gave her shoulder a gentle pat and then headed back up the beach. I could make out Jax's figure, his bounding strides recognizable even that far away.
I've got great news,
he huffed as he came to a stop next to us.
Really great news. Turns out we are insanely lucky.
I'm going to have to disagree with that,
Miles muttered. Jax ignored him.
I figured out where we are. We're in Beggar's Reach, the stretch past the old quarry, through the thick old woods. That must be why this cove's so hard to find. That river carried us even farther north than it seemed.
How is that great news?
I asked.
Because you know who lives nearby?
Jax's cheeks crinkled with a big ear-to-ear grin.
Tannen and Marcos.
No way!
I smiled. Tannen and Marcos Dolan were a pair of brothers who Jax and I had grown up with. Their father had been the official vintner of Castle Waverly, and as kids, the four of us had been inseparable, tearing around the courtyard, splashing in the creek, pranking the visiting merchants, and hiding from Headmaiden Marga. Tannen had been Jax's best friend, a good-natured athletic boy who'd always been down for a race or a dare. And Marcos was a year younger than me. He wasn't the smartest boy, and certainly not the most handsome. And he stuttered when he got nervous. But he was sweet and gentle, and a lifetime ago he'd been my first kiss.
They're old friends of ours,
Jax explained.
Their dad used to work in the castle, and when he retired, Lord Kent gave him this vineyard out on the coast. He died a couple of years ago, but his boys inherited the place. And guess what? They're just a few hours' walk from here.
Tannen and Marcos, wonderful,
Miles grumbled. He'd never gotten along with the brothers. Once, when we were little, Tannen had pushed Miles into a creek, and Miles had run crying to his mom. Both brothers caught a whipping for that, something they never forgave him for.
And what will these old friends do for us?
Zell asked.
They're good guys,
Jax said.
Tannen's practically a brother to me. They'll give us food, clean clothes, a place to lie low while we figure this all out.
My stomach rumbled audibly. I realized suddenly just how hungry I was. It's a good idea, better than staying on this beach all day. And I can vouch for the guys.
Oh, I'm sure you can,
Jax said, his smirk barely concealed. He never got over the fact that Marcos and I had made out. Zell didn't seem to pick up on it.
If you both trust them, then it's good enough for me. We should leave now and travel along the coast as far as we can, staying hidden in the cliff's shadow.
Wait,
Miles interrupted. He rubbed the bridge of his nose with his eyes shut, the way he always did when he was thinking.
Wait. We have to split up.
Jax spun toward him.
What? Why would we possibly do that?
Look, for all we know, every soldier in the West is out there looking for us. What happens if we all get caught together?
None of us answered.
Right. I don't know either, but I don't think it'll be good.
And we'll be better off if we split up?
Miles sighed.
Look around, Jax. What do you see? Because I see three worthless bastards, a worthless stable hand, and one absolutely priceless princess.
Jax didn't seem to get it, but I did. Lyrianna's the one our parents really want. Until they capture her, the rest of us, well, we still have value to them.
Because we know where she is.
Zell finished, then cocked his head at Miles.
Smart.
From there, it was just a matter of deciding who stayed and who went. Jax insisted he had to go, because Tannen would be most likely to listen to him. Miles tried to insist I should stay, because I'd be safest with the princess. And yeah, that kind of pissed me off. I pointed out that I had history with the guys too, and that just made Jax snicker. Zell offered to stay back, but Jax didn't trust him with Lyrianna. In the end, despite Miles's stammering protests, we decided that Jax, Zell, and I would go, and Miles would stay back with Lyrianna. They'd be safe, hidden here in the shadow of the cliffs, safe as they could be. We gathered our stuff and prepared to set out. I checked one last time on Lyrianna to make sure she knew what was happening and was okay with it. She let out a few soft meeps that I think meant yes. As I headed out to join Jax and Zell, though, Miles stopped me halfway up the beach.
Tilla, wait! Can I talk to you for a moment?
Miles, I know you don't want to stay behind, I began, but it just makes the most sense, okay?
That's not what this is about.
Miles stared down intensely at his bare feet.
I wanted to give you something. Just in case.
He reached into his coat and took something out. A small leather disc. Your sunstone? I asked.
I already have one. I was thinking we could trade. See, I modified mine this morning.
He turned it over in his hands.
I was thinking about what my mom did with that mage killer, so I ended up tinkering around. Normally there's a safety that immediately vents the gas if the glass facade is compromised, so I used a hairpin to disable it and...
He must have noticed the glazed look on my face.
If you break the glass while it's on, it'll go boom. Not like the mage killer or anything, but enough to start a fire and scare off anyone coming at you.
Oh. That did sound kind of useful, actually. I took the sunstone and turned it over. It was fancy, one of the really nice ones they sold in the upscale shops of Port Hamill. The lining of the disc was gold, inlaid with tiny sparkling rubies, and the back had an engraving of an owl, the sigil of House Hampstead. Below was their house motto, "Minds before might." I remember this sunstone. Miles's mom had given it to him as a present for his 13th birthday. He'd been so proud of it, he'd spent his entire visit to Castle Waverly showing it to anyone who'd pay attention. And now, he'd turned it into a bomb. For me.
Miles, just take it.
He closed my hand around it and pushed it away before I could change his mind. I awkwardly pulled my sunstone off my neck and gave it to him, and he looked down at it thoughtfully.
Listen, he said. In case this is the last time I see you, there's something I should tell you. Something I should have told you a long time ago.
Oh, no. Not an awkward declaration of love. That was the absolute last thing I wanted to deal with.
I'm coming back, Miles, I said.
That's a promise. Whatever it is, you can tell me then. He nodded.
Yeah, you're right. I'll tell you then.
It was better that way. Way, way better. I left him back at the fire pit with Lyrianna and caught up with Zell and Jax.
What was that about?
My brother asked. Nothing, I replied, heading up the coast as briskly as I could.
Now come on, boys. Let's get walking.
Chapter 10.
It wasn't the worst hike I ever took, but it was definitely up there. Jax led us along the beach for an eternity, until my feet ached from walking in the shifting sand. After that, it was just a climb up a steep, crumbling slope, and then a slog through some overgrown forest. If it were anyone else leading us, I'd be sure we were lost. But Jax knew the western coast like the back of his hand, and could navigate a maze at night blindfolded. So I followed him, shoving past the rustling oak trees, tromping over crackling leaves, trying, and failing, to avoid muddy puddles. We got to the Dolan Estate around mid-afternoon. An hour's ride from the town of Hale, this was probably as far north as Western Vineyards could go. Any farther north and you'd start encountering the frosty borderlands and the Zatochi tundra beyond them. A thin veil of clouds hid the sun, casting the world in a gloomy gray light. We stepped out of the forest and onto some gently sloping hills, dotted with rows and rows of barren white posts, their grapes already harvested. Another day, I might have thought it looked pretty, but right now, they looked way too much like graves.
"I don't like it," Zell muttered. "Too exposed. Anyone could see us here." "Right, which is why we're headed toward the house."
Jax jerked his head down the vineyard. A country estate lay at the end, a beautiful two-story manor with a painted stone front and a red shingled roof, and pretty arched windows with carved wooden panels. A stable sat to the side, and an exceptionally cute herb garden sprawled out alongside it. It was a hell of a place for an old vintner, even one who'd served Castle Waverly for 30 years. How did the old saying go? A Kent will reward loyalty 100 times over, but punish betrayal just once. We were halfway across the vineyard when Tannen stepped out of the house, carrying an empty tin pail. He was stout and handsome, with toned biceps and neatly combed brown hair. I hadn't seen him in a couple of years, but they'd obviously been good to him. His arms were bigger and muscular like Jax's, and a sandy beard dotted his dimpled chin.
"Hey!"
Jax shouted. Tannen looked up and saw us. His jaw dropped and his eyes went wide. Did we really look that bad?
"Jax! Tilla!"
he shouted. Jax let out a booming laugh.
"Come on, Tannen! Is that any way to greet your old friends?"
He glanced back at Zell and me.
"All right. It's not every day your friends show up with a glassy warrior."
Tannen rubbed his eye with the back of his big, ruddy hand.
"Forget him! What are you doing here?"
I stopped moving, uncertain, but Jax pushed toward the house.
"I'm gonna level with you, Tannen. We're in trouble. Big trouble. We need your help."
My help?"
Tannen asked, and then blinked as if he suddenly understood.
"Right. Okay, yeah, of course. Whatever you need. Why don't you come on in and tell me what's going on?" "That's my boy."
Jax beamed and broke into a sprint. I wanted to rush after him, but for some weird reason, my legs held firm. An unpleasant truth twisted my stomach. We'd come all the way out here because we desperately needed help. But if we went in there, we'd be pulling two more people into this mess. If my father got word that they'd sheltered us, they'd be just as screwed as we were. I looked to Zell, and he was standing firm, too. His brow furrowed, his gaze intense. Was he feeling guilty too, or was this something else entirely?
"Jax!" I called out. "Maybe we should—"
"Marcos!"
Tannen yelled, cutting me off.
"Get out here! You're not going to believe it. Tilla and Jax are here, and they need our help."
The door to the stable swung open. A tall, thin young man stepped out, jaw hanging open in disbelief. Marcos Dolan had barely changed. Messy blonde hair hung down around his shoulders, and even in the shadow of his hand I could make out his crooked nose and freckled cheeks. From across the vineyard, his pale green eyes found mine.
"T-t-Tilla?"
he stammered. I remember it that night, 3 years ago, after the summer's bounty feast. The adults were all drunk, either passed out around the castle or singing dirty ballads in the hall. Jax and Tannen had stolen a whole skin of wine and snuck off to drink it. Marcos and I had found ourselves hiding out in the hayloft above the stables, lying together in a big, soft pile of hay.